Welcome to Slaughter for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've run SLP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just when I know how to join us, we have a talk guest every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. Search for call ID 17702. Use your Chrome browser or Chromium derivative like Brave. And of course, we have a co-stream over on Twitch TV. Just look for SFU On Call. That's SFUONCALL. And you will find me. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Twitter, my Twitter account is sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. I have a personal account called Paul Franz over on Twitter also. That's PAULFRANZ. There is no T in that Franz. So just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. Of course, I have my business account, which is Franz Games. And of course, this lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on various other feeds, iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. Steve Cole is busy doing something. Didn't see any posts about what he has been doing, so I don't know what he's been doing. See, Patrick. Same old, same old. He's been working on SCV updates and, of course, the Tholian Master Starship book. Gene is busy working on the GURPS Klingon book, also updating the product list. Got the Healing Frequencies and Communicate number 166 edited and out the door. And, of course, he is always busy managing Facebook and the Twitters. Moving on to the SCV Online Tournament. We still have all 16 that we need to get the Sapphire Star Tournament 2 off the ground. We're up to 12. We just need 4 more people. Come on, people. I know that it's going to run into the holidays, but also it can be an opportunity to holidays. Say, oh, I'm sorry. I can't spend another 3 hours with you. I got the time off. I promised that I was going to be playing a game with a friend of mine. So thank you. And get away from your family for just a little bit. Because some of us need it during the holidays. Need just a little bit of time. Just a tiny bit away from our families. I know that I do sometimes. And, of course, when it comes to the library report for this week, no progress, unfortunately, with the complete conversion being at 2,519, yet to be converted is 811. We're still stuck at a 75.65% of that have been completed conversions. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, you've got me, you got Dave. Barry is going to be working. He's very tired. I already talked to him earlier this week, and he said, I'm going to be waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I'm going to need, by the time things roll around, I'm going to be tired, and I'm going to need to get back up early for like tomorrow, very early in the morning. So it's like, okay, big off. So that is why the topics for this evening are currently, because as I've always mentioned before, and I will continue to remind people of, and that is the topics for this evening are subject to change without notice. So even our dear sweet fans are might not realize that things have changed. So don't mind me. For those on the video, I'm just at the moment I'm that's weird. It should be live. Don't mind me for a moment. Yeah, I am streaming. Okay. That is weird. Because it should be going. Okay, there it is. I always get this thing wrong. I'm not sure how I do it. So. Oops. And let me just turn down the sound there. And now we'll continue on our merry way. And we will start. That's great, Dave. And I'm keeping an eye on both of those. Just in case one drops. And I will keep an eye on the chat room. And if there's anyone who chats, I do have my keyboard here so I can chat back, just in case that is required. But, and currently the Astros are winning and they're beating the Yankees at the bottom of the third, so I'm happy. So, yes, I'm a baseball fan. If you listen to the podcast long enough, you know that. And I'm an Orioles fan that way, and I know they were like the second to worst team. I think the second worst team? Yeah, I think it's the second to worst team in all of baseball, the first actually being the Detroit Tigers. So, wow. Grr. Dave said, go Yankees. I'm not a Yankees fan. Never have been. Never will. But to be honest, when it comes to Astros versus Yankees, I really feel like the Astros will beat the Yankees overall. And Tanaka, who's pitching tonight, given that the Astros now are winning 3-1 against Tanaka, I have a feeling that the Astros are going to win tonight. The thing is, the Astros win tonight, I have a hard time believing that the Yankees are going to be able to come back from losing, being down 3-1. And it is possible that the Astros might tie it all up by tomorrow night. But we'll have to wait and see. But get back to actually what this stream and what this podcast is about, which is the Starfleet Universe on call. And talking about the Starfleet Universe and anything, hopefully things related to that, because every once in a while we do go off the rails here and sometimes talk about technology, sometimes talk about things that are completely unrelated, i.e. baseball. But getting back to the topic for this evening, I did not finish reading the fiction from Capital number 53, but it actually is a very, very nice piece. It is, I think, given the length, and I'm glad for the length, because it really helps the building up of the characters, the building up of the plot, and so forth, and really allows the whole story to be shown, and actually you can see the interaction, how that would, because there is some ships involved in the story, how that would actually work. One of the things that happens, I'm not giving away a lot here. I'm avoiding spoilers here. The only thing I will mention was that one ship tractors another, and when that happens, they're able to break the lock on by, because they're so close to a planet, go through the atmosphere and break the tractor, you know, which is, anyways, play Starfleet battles around a planet. As they say, remember the sign over the academy door, which is remember your tractors. Damn it. Remember the tractor. I think it's remember tractors, damn it, or something like that. But basically, you know, remember how those affect things, you know, and running through the atmosphere, that's going to have an effect. And if you tractor, you have two ships that are tractored way too close to a planet, that's one of those possibilities. You know, so I think, you know, it's an excellent story, definitely worth the read, definitely worth the buy of Capsule number 53. Obviously, if you are a fan of SFB, Federation Commander, FNE, those things, or just want to know what's going on with all of those products, I think the best thing to do is to buy Captain's Log number 53. I think it's well worth the price. I think it is. You know, obviously I got a bias here because I'm one of the authors for a couple of the articles, and because of that, I get a free copy. And yay for me. So I didn't buy it, so I can't say whether I would buy it if I didn't get it for free. But that's, again, that's one of those things that is just, it is what it is. You know, I think it would be worth the money, really, because how often do Cabin's Logs not actually come out these days? You know, but anyway. Now my cats are going crazy. You probably can't hear them, but I can. Get squirrely. But anyway, okay, moving on from the Cabin's Log number 53, the piece of fiction, because I told you I would actually get a chance to read it. I'm sorry I did not finish reading it, but I almost completed it. It's a really, really good story. Really well worth the read. Yeah, oh, me too. Dave's mentioned that he loves to see new material and see the game grow. And that's one thing that I mentioned last week, which is, A2B definitely has plans for things. One thing that they did, I think last week it was, I saw something about this, which was they were going to have a flagships attack, you know, book for Federation Commander. But to get the ships out quicker for people, what they did is they released two ship card packs, which has, you know, some of the ships. Now, of course, the question is this more another one of, what was it? I forget what the ship card pack was. It's been a while. Basically, one of the ship card packs where every single ship's unique, or is there a lot of duplication from other ship card packs? Because I know that's one thing that Steve Cole said, that like the, I forget which ones. The original ship card pack that had the original ships. I forget what it is. The Zochi? Not Zochi. Might be the Zochi. I forget. But there was a pack that was created that basically they're all new ships. And Steve Cole said, you know, this actually is costing us quite a bit of money because we have to produce all – because – of all the, well, the cost is higher because of each card has to be produced and designed. And the design cost is much higher than other card packs where you only have to design two of the four, or, you know, half of the cards, the other half are duplicates of other card packs. You know, it's like the old CDs and LPs, where you have half hits, you know, and the other ones were like more of side projects, ones that the band wanted to do, but they really weren't top sellers. So people normally didn't really want those. They want like the side projects that the band, they weren't really want that great and so forth. So, given that, you know, oh crap, where was I? I got sidetracked by reading one of the messages. But anyway, okay, moving on. Okay, what I wanted to actually talk about tonight is actually a topic I've discussed about previously, but I figured it's a good thing to talk about now. Just because of, I think it's a good tie-in to what we were talking, you know, the story, the fiction that was included in Cabell's Log number 53. And that's the whole idea of interactive fiction. Now, what would be interesting to me, I'm not sure how long you, listener, have been listening to the podcast, but I'll talk about what interactive fiction is, just to let you know in case you actually didn't know. And that is that interactive fiction is, okay, best way to, if you've ever played, actually, I'm not sure, it depends about how old you are. If you're my age, up in your 50s, yes, I'm that old. Back in the day, there was a game called Zork. And basically, it was a dungeon game where you would enter these commands, and you could do these different things, like, oh, pick up this item, open this door, go down this corridor. You know, Dave remembers Zork. And it basically, you got to explore this world through text, pure text. Versus today. Today, if you did the same thing, what you'd be doing is probably a first person shoot 'em up game, possibly. Or not, doesn't even have to be a shoot 'em up game. It could be, you know, a first person, you know, adventure game. You'd have that more, you know, more like these days. And that is, can be considered interactive fiction. But normally today, actually, there's multiple genres of interactive fiction. Some of them are multimedia. Some of them are pure text. Some of them are, you know, are like, you know, the first person games. I guess you could actually kind of consider them as interactive fiction, especially these days a lot. If you really think about it, a lot of these games, whether it is, you know, Call of Duty or Gears of War or any of these games, to a certain degree, they're interactive fiction in that by playing them, it's telling a story. And a lot of interactive fiction games, I think, are really cool. At least the idea behind them is really neat. The whole idea that through a simple interface, you can interact with your world. And maybe it's just me being, you know, sentimental about Zork and games like that. And I really feel like that the idea of going through a world in just pure text form, where you know, it's like reading a book, but in the case of interaction fiction, there's actually multiple, again, genres, and again within the text-based field, text-based interactive fiction, because there's different ways of it happening. There's interactive fiction that basically is a puzzle. You're playing a game to discover, to solve this riddle, this puzzle. And that's the whole game. Then there's the interactive fiction that basically what it is you going exploring in this world. And in this world, you can interact with it, but the whole idea of interacting with it is like interacting with characters from a novel, that you discover the story as it goes on. For example, you know, let's say that you are in, I don't know, I'm right now, strange as my think about it, is Macbeth. I this came into my head, the interactive fiction with Macbeth, and you go around castle, and one of the things you find is you find, you know, you know, go onto the castle ramparts, and you see the ghosts, and you see this I think it's Macbeth talking to this ghost, you know, and you just happen to upon him, versus you being directed. See, that's the one thing that's different between interactive fiction and a movie, or even a story, per se, in that in a story you, the author, tells the narrative. The reader says, you're going to be here at this point. You're going to be here at this point. You're going to be here at that point. So you're basically, or even a film, the film's the same way, where you're going to be here, you're going to be here, you're going to be here. And it forces you to go to, it takes you by the hand, and you go from place to place to place to place. And that's your perspective that you get. Now, obviously the great part about that is it gives the person telling the story ultimate control. They can have it so the story gets laid out just the way they want it. Now, interactive fiction, telling a story through interactive fiction, it's more of discovery. Now, this is one of those things that I've thought about when it comes to 360-degree films. The whole idea of a VR or VR film. And that is where you can look around. You might be still kind of guided to a certain degree, but you can look around to any direction you want. Now, what would an author do to actually encourage you to look the direction they want you to look, so that you don't miss any part of the story? And in that case, what you would do is sound. Make sure, obviously, the important thing is that you have 3D sound, so that the idea is that with VR, you can hear sound over here. So what's your natural thing to do? The natural thing to do is to turn towards the sound. So that, you know, whether it is somebody's low voices, or it's a sharp sound of maybe a rock falling, you know, I'm just thinking about the whole idea of, you know, I'm sure we've all seen this in movies, where you have these guards, guard, and then you have a spy who takes a stone, throws a rock over there, and he's over here. The guards go over there to investigate the sound, and he comes and gets past the guards, or at least, you know, was able to subdue one. There's two guards. One guard goes looking and subdues the other guard. You know, that kind of thing. The whole idea is that, you know, that you distract people. Or so it's kind of, in my mind, it's kind of a gentle way of guiding them is through 3D sound. The sound that's occurring over here, so you naturally just want to turn towards the sound. Especially, and I'm thinking about, especially in the case of whispers, soft sounds. Because if you hear a soft sound, you want, what was that? You know, or sharp sound, you're surprised, you still look over there. You know, that'd be a great way for VR to work. Now, in interactive fiction, you have to do the same kind of thing. If obviously, there are, when it comes to interactive fiction, is that the author of this interactive fiction, assuming this is not purely a game, because games have a different focus. Games, usually you're solving a puzzle or trying to defeat. Well, you know, normally it's a puzzle. It's like you have to, at the very least, you know, it's a puzzle, because invariably, either whether you're going to try to defeat the boss guy, you know, or you are trying to figure out, they're trying to get to like the next room. You know, because, oh, it's locked. Okay, where's the key? Okay, I don't have any keys. Okay, let's go. We need to go, to get into that room, we need to go find where the key is or how to acquire the key. Because in some cases, okay, it's a simple, oh, it's in this drawer over here. Or in this case, or another case, okay, you have to solve this riddle from this creature, you know, or even Rumpelstiltskin, you know, that kind of thing. And you know, so it ends up being a puzzle versus a story. In the case of a story, you would actually, presents a whole different challenge. And that is the idea of having people find these things, and obviously certain things, it wouldn't be as smooth of a storytelling, which is which makes it the ultimate challenge in my mind of storytelling. And that is discovering what the story is about, what this world is about, what these characters are doing, the relationships of the characters. You know, let's say, I was going to mention, you know, oh, if this person dies, okay, who did it? You know, in that case, that's almost like, we're going to a puzzle. But that's not what you're trying to do. What you're trying to do is, in the case of that story, is have people discover what the story is. And some of that, obviously, you have to provide kind of clues, little hints that, okay, you should go this way or go that way. But timing-wise, that always becomes a problem because of, in the case of a, you know, a normal film, you know, you set the timing. But in the case of, let's say, interactive fiction, you might find out that this person, you know, went off the deep end later. So it's kind of weird in that instead of maybe hearing them talk about it, you might hear it now third hand from another character that says, oh yeah, so-and-so said this, this, and this. Versus if you would have gone like to that person's room, he would have interacted with you and he would give you a description of, oh yeah, I've been stuck here all my life, or, you know, whatever his dialogue is. It's now first person versus third person. So, you know, that kind of interactive fiction really is a big challenge. Now, I like interactive fiction. I haven't played as much of it as I probably should, because I do enjoy it when I get into it. I rarely have, the problem is finding the time because of the only problem with interactive fiction is not like a handheld game. Though there are actually interactive fiction games which you can play on your phone. It's just not nearly as nice because of, for like an iPad or computer, which has interactive fiction where you actually can type in things. It is a lot richer because you can spend the time of sitting down and going through the interactive fiction on a phone, well, you know, and discovering things, like discovering the commands, discovering how to interact with this universe, versus a phone. One of the things you have to kind of cheat, and that is, okay, you have to say, okay, what, here's your list of possibilities that you can select, versus, you know, typing, trying to figure out the commands and so forth, which is part of the fun of interactive fiction, is discovering, you know, in the case of what you can and cannot do. Now, I know a long time ago, actually, I talked about an idea, and I still would love to do it. I do not, at the moment, I do not have the time to do it, which is the whole idea of creating an interactive fiction page where people could create stories. Or, well, I know what I really like, but I'm asking way too much, because the problem, here's always the problem. The problem with an interactive fiction website where you're building a common story is that invariably it's like Wikipedia. It ends up being like Wikipedia. You need editors that are going to go in there, trusted editors that can go in there and then fix things when somebody basically like a spammer or whatever gets into your, or even ne'er-do-wells. I'm not talking about people that are going to destroy it, which in theory they could. But not just that, but people, you know, all of a sudden perverts and so forth. You know, you have a nice clean story, and all of a sudden they're talking about these two characters having sex or something like that. You know, change it from nice clean interactive fiction to erotica, basically. You know, it's like that's not what I'd want for it. You know, what I'd want for it to be is a community based project. You know, obviously it takes a lot of hard work to begin with to get it to that point. But, you know, again, that's what I would like to do. Now, as I said, I don't have time to do it right now. I still have the domain, and actually that was one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it, because the domain is coming up for a renewal, and it just gave me the idea bring it back up again, because I'm not giving up the domain. Unfortunately, I got a few of these domains that I'm just not going to be giving up, you know. And it's like, you know, some of these domains actually I probably should give up, because I will never be using them. But some of them, it's not FOMO, the fear of missing out per se, but it is the fear of I give up a domain and then I decide to go forward with something along those lines, and I've lost the domain. And then someone says, oh, well, you know, you can get that domain back for quite. Yeah, I don't think so. So, actually, excuse me. Don't mind me. Yes, I'm paranoid. But anyhow, back to interactive fiction. I just have that fear, and that's why I have a few domains, probably more than I ever really, really want. But I think that the thing with interactive fiction is that it is just so cool, you know, in an interactive format, because the problem is with most tools these days, when it comes to interactive fiction, are designed for a single author. They're not meant for a team. And that's why when I originally thought about it, oh, there's, I forget what it is. dang, it's been a while. But there is one which is basically actually really cool. I like it. Though I think it's too directed, you know? It's web-based, and unfortunately, it's multimedia, so it's not really command oriented. I like command oriented versus this. Oh, you know, click this, click that. Now, obviously, the one thing that I kind of agree with the the web, you know, the web-based, the multimedia is multimedia. I think that a story could be directly enhanced by having the appropriate, some appropriate video or appropriate, possibly even sound. You know, maybe have it so that there's a sound, there's a loop that plays in the background when you get into a certain room and you keep on hearing this, or that background sound might change based on certain conditions, i.e. something like, oh, there's a monster in the room, or there's a monster, you know, outside the door, or you like, you see on the text on the screen, it says that the text on the screen, and you know, and you see it say, oh, you hear someone outside the door, so something kind of creepy is, you hear, you know, as the background noise, or you know, a picture, because some people aren't great at describing. Even they're really good at describing. In some cases, the biggest issue, obviously, with fiction, no matter what form, is descriptions. You can either get too detailed, which you leave nothing to the imagination of the reader, or you don't describe it enough, so the reader doesn't have a way of creating a picture in his own mind of what it looks like, you know, whether it's a scene or it is an object or it's a person, you know. I would say that the big problem in the case of interactive fiction and having that multimedia, you know, whether it's a movie, a short clip or a sound or a graphic, you know, a picture, is that now you've removed that any possibility of using actively that person's imagination to a certain degree. I say that because I was thinking about the sound thing. The sound thing, you can use the sounds as background, as a way of setting mood for a particular, where you are in this world, you know, because Lord knows, I know that what is it, Markiplier? I think he's recognized this. If you ever watch YouTube videos, Markiplier, he's a big one. There's another one, I forget what it is. My daughter likes to watch Markiplier, and Lord knows, because she's watched it enough times. I've watched not full episodes, in some cases full episodes, but most of the time just clips of his episodes. And one thing he definitely mentioned was that that he can tell in some cases, at least I know he's recognized where the music, it can be used to set the mood. Also, in some cases, there are sounds that get played, in the headphones, they get played, and then he knows that, okay, he hears, you know, this sound, a certain sound, And he knows a certain creature is approaching just from the sound. So it makes it quite an experience by doing it that way. And I think interactive fiction can be like, that's one way I think it can really improve, being multimedia can improve the experience of interactive fiction, is through that. Now, Starfleet Universe, like any other world, is, I think, can definitely be done via interactive fiction. You can actually describe the world. You can describe the characters, and you can interact those characters. Now, as I mentioned before, I started it, and I realized that it's a pretty big task. Now, I think I've read multiple websites on interactive fiction. Lord knows there's quite a few engines out there. Some of them are pretty old. Some of the really good ones that are old, and they don't really work that well. Not work that well, but I mean, they're not, as I mentioned before, they're not really designed for a team effort. They're mainly designed for single person's efforts. And there's, you know, and actually there are these contests for interactive fiction and all that kind of thing. But so, you know, in my mind, the whole thing, it would be important to have a team approach so that multiple people can work on a world. It's like the Starfire series. It's a good example where Dave Weber, he wrote some of those books by himself. But in some other cases, he got a co-author with him, Steve Hall. Yeah, Steve Hall. I think it's Steve Hall was the name of the author. But together, they were able to work together. Each person worked on like a different chapter. Now, I'm not sure how they worked. Did they have it so the one person wrote their chapter, then another person then wrote their chapter, so they go back and forth? Or did basically, because I'm not sure if you've ever seen this in a books, because I've seen this, where you have definitely multiple authors, you can tell. And you go between these two characters in this book. And they don't interact all that much until closer to the end of the book. But the whole idea is you're basically seeing these two storylines come together. And obviously, at least for me, each chapter is a progression on a certain part of the storyline, one that's based off of this character or based off of this character. And so, given that example, the whole idea of having multiple people working within a interactive fiction environment to produce a piece of interactive fiction, I see that as a real possibility because of you can break off and work on separate parts of the world. Now, obviously, there has to be, at least to a certain degree, there has to be a clear vision on what is and what is not in this world. For example, you can't have it so that more part of this world is, you know, back in prehistoric age, and then you have another part which is highly scientific, you know, science fiction, you know, futuristic. You know, obviously, in theory, you can do that, but that would involve, you have the whole idea of time travel, and that's the way you would do that. But in that case, you have to have, like in the case of science fiction, characters and objects interacting with prehistoric, which I don't see as a big deal. But I can see that as a possible issue that if you have two authors have different ideas about what this certain world is about, you know, and they didn't say, oh, we're going to have time travel involved. Then you'll go back and forth between the future to the deep past, you know, which personally I don't like that. I find time traveling overall not that compelling and usually not done right, because always the biggest issue with time travel in my mind, and having that as a subject and as part of a story, is when you go back in time, the biggest question always is, when you go back in time, how much can you change before you split the timeline? Because of the changing the past affects the future. So in my mind, that as I mentioned before, I think the TV show Continuum is the best one who did this, where they actually showed that, okay, that they explicitly pointed out that this happens, that with every single difference that you make, if you go back in the past and you change something, no matter how small, an interaction with somebody, you know, consider the butterfly effect. But in my mind, it's more of it's a branching effect. Because if you change the past, now, where you were in the future, that no longer exists. That, if you go in the future, now the branch goes over here, goes here, instead of this way, it's up this direction. So you're going to be coming back to over here, not over here. And that's one of those things in the continuum that they showed very well, especially at the ending of the continuum. And that is that one thing that they brought really clear that, okay, yes, you can save your husband, you can save your child, that you're coming, that you're left the future going the past to fix. But when you do that, there's going to be a future you that will exist, and because it's going to be a different timeline. And that future you doesn't go back. So when you go forward, that's no longer your husband and your child. It's that future you's husband and child. So it's, you know, I think they did a really good job in Continuum in showing the whole idea, whole issue with time travel and the whole idea of branching, you know, time branching. If you modify the past, because most time traveling, they go, oh, we need to go back and fix time. So we go back in time to quote unquote fix it, to keep the timeline going straight and not branch as they see. But the problem is, by the time that happens in the past, it's already branched the future. So, you know, that's one of those minor issues I have with Doctor Who. But I enjoy the show so much, I really don't care, because it goes through time and space, you know, back in the past, goes in the future, goes anywhere in the universe. You know, but I enjoy it. I enjoy the interactions. I enjoy the relationships and the characters so much that I don't care at that point. So, you know, yes, that kind of thing, you know, time travel. that part is not absolutely a gotcha for me. But I think it's interesting. Now, as I mentioned, there's all kinds of different kind of interactive fiction, but me, I prefer text-based. The old, as I mentioned before, the whole Zork thing, where you come up with commands, or you, the way you interact with the system is through text. Now, see, there's some beauty in that, in my mind. The beauty of that is accessibility-wise, assuming that wherever you use, preferably a browser, because Lord knows the browser is the UI these days. And that is that text, you know, is the ultimate accessible thing. Because these days you can do text to speech, you can do speech to text. Speech to text is difficult, you know, but, you know, there's quite a few good programs out there for that. Obviously, that's when things like pictures and video really, for, let's say you have a blind person, that doesn't help them at all. Sound, that can help people. Now, of course, the problem with sound is, okay, if you have a deaf person, then they can't hear the sound. But text, flat text, no sound, no graphics, is ultimate. Because of, if they're blind, they can have a text reader. If they're if they can't hear, they don't have to hear anything. So that's one of those beauties of text based. And always, to me, that was always part of the fun of Zork, which was discovering what the commands were, what you could do in some cases, you know, whether it was pick up this item or maybe climb the wall, you know, or something like that. And, you know, because if I recall correctly, Zork never really told you what commands were available. Now, obviously, people told each other about it. And actually, I know there were books out there on how to play Zork. You know, and there was Zork 1, 2, and 3. Actually, I'm not sure if that's on the Internet Archive, because if I recall correctly, Zork's games were all DOS-based games. Actually, DOS-based, I think they also were available on the Commodore 64. I forget if they ever ported that to the trash, 80. Yes, this is how long ago it was. You know? So. But anyway. So. You know, I think that was part of the fun. Now. Is that a kind of project that could be done? Yeah, I think so. The question is whether it's worth the effort to do. Because currently, you know, obviously the one thing that I'm focusing on these days is Starfleet Warlord. Just because of, I see there, that could actually expand quite quickly. I think that I can get a bigger audience for that. And especially with what I'm working on with the back end, which is the whole idea of automating the whole process. So people still play asynchronous games. And I think what I'm doing can keep it going. You know, I think people still be interested in asynchronous play. And especially if I can get responsive design, a responsive designed website, I think I can keep it going. Now, the tough part, to me, always the tough part about Warlord is that I thought about it, and in the past, and that is, oh, could we play it on the phone? And most part, the answer is no. You know, if you want a small game, yeah, I think you could do it. But the biggest issue, obviously, is entering in the movements. Now, obviously, as I mentioned before, I think the one way of getting around that for a mobile device is basically having a hex design. And then the idea is you had your ship in the middle, and this, and that has your location. And then you just click on the hex locations. And you just go click, 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 click. And it basically, it takes the ship and it'll move it around the map in its little area. And it makes it would make it really easy to enter in movement for that. So that's possible. You know, maybe I'd have to do something with that. You know, so you enter in movement, that'd be one way of doing it. And the great thing about that would be that you could show for known terrain, for terrain that you know what it is, you could do that. Now, obviously, if you go off map, let's say that you've gotten scans for Sector 1-1, but you don't have a scan for Sector 1-2. So if you go that way, or maybe would that be that way for you? But basically, if you're looking at the map and you go right on the map, then you go from 1-1 to 1-2. No, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. 1-1 to 1-2 is down because it's Y. So you'd go downwards on the map. And at some point, you know, you might not have a scan for 1-2, so you don't have no clue what the terrain is, in which case that could be reflected in the client or the website, the web page, so that when you're entering orders, it would show you basic question marks. It's like, oh, I have no clue what's here. You're flying blind, and you can, in theory, go right into an asteroid field or a mine field, and you would never know it. So that's because what happens in that case is there's always a chance that when you go from one sector to another sector, there is a possibility you might die just by moving on to the next map. Now, obviously, you can scan to the next sector over, but to scan the next sector over, you need a base located in the sector you're currently in. Then you can do a sector scan for like a terrain scan for the next one over. But the cheapest use and the fastest usually is ships. You buy a cheap scout, exploration freighter. Usually an FEL, a large exploration freighter. So it's cheap. It has the scouting channels that you need, and it can do a full scan for you. And if you lose it, you lose it. You know, hopefully your economics are built up enough that you can afford to lose a ship or two. You know, so you know, I think so that's why I have not worked that much on it. You know, I haven't gotten the gumption to do that, to work back on the interactive fiction. I might work on a little bit on this weekend. You never know. Most probably, I'm thinking that I most probably will work. I've work on the automation for creating games, because I was looking into what I want to do is have it so the engine takes a file, a parameters file, which sets what the parameters are for that game, and then just have it go read into the engine and just runs. Because that's one thing I was looking into this past weekend, which was, okay, what exactly, there's a screen called the Zap screen in the engine. You click zap. Okay, zap. Okay, are you sure you want to do this? And what the zap screen does is it zaps the database. It clears out, you know, the old ships, the old terrain, all this. It's they're wiped. It's gone. And that's what the whole idea of it is. Because to create a game, what you do is you take the game files from an old game, copy them into a new directory, and then you run zap. And it'll zap them, and then you, after it zaps them, then you set all the parameters, and those parameters are set into the actual file itself. Now, given that, there's one possibility, which I just thought about while discussing it with you. And that is the possibility of, I got some utilities where I actually can import or create a database file, an XBase file from a CSV file. I just need to know the structure. And I can create it. And I'm just wondering if that is a possibility. I have to wait and see. But it might be interesting to see how that would turn out. Because that might be a simple way of doing it, instead of having to rely on a completely built and developed in Clipper. Or in this case, Harbor. Because Harbor actually is a derivative of Clipper. The one thing with Harbor you can do with Harbor that is that there are additional functions that were created to do certain things. And actually, there are certain things you can do, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. And then back in the Clipper days, you could actually create sockets and do some of this modern programming, you know, which is interesting. Now, the thing is that the XBase program gets converted from XBase into C and then compiled. So in theory, if you really, really wanted to, you could actually create like a front end that would call into this XBase code. That's another way of interacting. I'm not exactly sure how to do a multi-language version. My guess is that you would have to compile it, generate the C code, keep the C code, and then take the C code and the libraries and then do a compilation and link. I'm not exactly sure how you would do that. I'm sure there's people that have done that. But I'm hoping that I don't have to do something crazy like that. Well, I think with that, we will wrap it up for this evening. Had a nice little talk about interactive fiction and also about Starfleet Warlord and how I think that, again, as I mentioned before, that I think is the future. And obviously, I think if anyone out there knows of a team-based interactive fiction tool, please tell me, especially if it's open source. If it's not even open source, if it's closed source and it's a product, which I have a hard time believing that someone actually would create one just because of, I'm not sure there is much of a market out there for an interactive fiction building tool. That's why I was thinking open source would probably be a better tool to look at. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.